This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. This week's episode was recorded on January 10th, 2016. On this week's episode, John Francois, Nick White, and I, Mike Rappin, discuss comics we read recently and what books we're excited for this week. This week's focal topic was about comic book storage and cataloging, a topic we've discussed slightly before, but this week we went into more depth on how each of us deals with our comics. And now, this week's episode. This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. I'm your host, Mike Rappin, editor-in-chief for Destroy the Cyborg. With me this week are two fantastic human beings, John Francois.
Hello.
And Nick White.
Hey.
Thank you guys for joining me this week. How have you been? How have comics been? More importantly, I guess.
Slow, actually. I've been avoiding leaving the house because it's winter and it's... Well, I'm lazy. That's actually the real reason.
No, that's understandable. Is there actual snow in Michigan? Do you guys have snow?
Yeah.
There is, actually. Right now, we're sitting into a giant snowstorm.
Okay. Well, it's raining here in New York, so...
Oh.
It's like a very cool, like 45, 50 degrees out today, so... Yeah, happy Christmas. Winter, I guess.
Yeah, something like that. Our temperature actually started off, the morning was the warmest it's going to get today. It's been dropping in temperature ever since.
Oh, that sounds horrible.
It's okay. It's also really windy, which means that the house fire that happened a couple of doors down blew all the smoke into our yard.
Oh.
Yay.
It's been a weird day.
I guess. And then there's the podcast. So,
yes.
Nick, how about you? How have you been?
Pretty good. John's right. The weather has been super, super weird. Went out to get comics yesterday, and it was perfectly fine going to Grand Rapids. And then on the way back, it... Poured. And then about 15 minutes after we made it back to West Coast, if you want to call it that, the snow just started falling and falling. And it's been crazy. And it's good because when you have situations like this, the idea that you have to legitimate your laziness really goes away. Because you can point outside or you can go, well, you know, the weather, and then the boring people that like to talk about the weather take over the conversation, and the non-boring people who have no reason to want to sit down and discuss the weather, because that's what boring people do, they stop the conversation because they don't want to talk about the weather. So it works out perfectly. I'm more than okay with it. I'm just going to sit down and finish Star Wars Legacy.
Well, I'm so happy that I brought up the weather. That makes me a boring person. So thanks, Nick. how have comics been, though, for you guys? Have you read anything interesting? Let's get into things. You know, what did you read in the last week? That's the go-to question every week.
I've been catching up a lot. I just read Paper Girls 1 and 2 and, gosh, what was it? East of West number 21. So I'm a little bit behind.
Gotcha. What was your favorite out of those three that you read?
East of West. That series has been consistently good. Between the story that's being told and the setting, I really, really enjoy reading it. And it's mostly the setting that really keeps me coming back, because it's this weird, like, pseudo-future where everything is super different, but also kind of the same, because everything's still shitty.
Yeah. Did you read the, what was it? Did you read the, like, little one-shot that they put out that gave, like, the history of the world?
Are you talking about the annual thing?
Yeah, it was kind of an annual, yeah.
I guess it wasn't, it wasn't really an annual, but I did read it, yes. I really enjoyed that one.
No one wants to use the A word.
yeah. No, it was good. No, that's cool. Nick, what'd you read last week?
Let me see. I read Ivar Timewalker 11 and 12. That was after I promptly dropped 12 on its head, if a comic has a head, I guess, on its corner. And notched that to the point that, you know, my OCD comic fervor kicked in, and I briefly considered, sending it to a specialist or whatever. But, Ivar Timewalker ended. It was beautiful, I think. I'm not so certain I understand it, what happened. But they did this really cool kind of kaleidoscope effect, this, like, visual technique of showing all of, like, the multiple universes that were out there and the amount of detail that went into that. Like, there's one where Ivar and his family are, like, sort of, I mean, I'm not stereotyping. This is what they were. They were sort of like rednecks and like morbidly obese in the South. And they had another one where they were like, I think like Vikings and another, like all of these different like crazy multiple timelines. It was interesting. It ended exactly how I thought it would, which is weird. Mm-hmm. It's almost sort of a genius ending in that you expected it, so because of that you didn't expect it, but then it happened anyway, I guess. I'm still confused about it. Yeah, well, I'm interested to see where Valiant goes with the universe from this, and I think maybe that will provide more clarity. I read Green Arrow, I think it was 36 and 37. Oh, mm-hmm. man, this book is, like, so weird and so zany, and I love that this new team of Ben Percy and Patrick, I think he also just goes by Patch or Patrick Zercher, have taken the time to basically come in after the Arrow team wrote the book and say, look, like, you guys introduced Felicity Smoke literally out of thin air, no pun intended. smoke gets in your eyes. I'll stop right there.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know. And they said, look, that was just ridiculous. Like, what's going on? So they jettisoned all of that Arrow stuff, really not without much explanation. And they've basically had Arrow going after, trying to retrieve his dog, who's also like part wolf, who has like these ancient primordial heritage that this Mexican cartel stole him and took him down to Mexico, and now he's trying to retrieve him because this cartel is led by this mysterious dude who believes that like bones have mystical power. It's goofy and it's weird and I love it. And most recently, the guy says to Arrow, like, I sense power in you as well. And he's like, well, what do you mean? I can't fly. I don't shoot laser beams out of my eyes. And he says, well, I know you're an outsider. And an outsider is what Lemire introduced when you had the Outsiders War, which is where you had like the Axe Clan and the Bow Clan and the Fist Clan all fighting. And it suggested that they had this crazy, weird lineage and heritage that made them so competent as fighters. I don't know. I just love that he's referencing Lemire. So
that... there sounds like there's a lot of history in that book, and it almost reminds me of Iron Fist in a way, but
that's the whole idea. Yeah, like the idea that these clans or tribes that, you know, they're each one is, you know, like has mastered a certain way of fighting or a certain weapon, and they all come together and take sides in the Outsiders War, which you ought to read. I can't recommend that enough.
I think you've told me to read that book probably 10 times now.
10 sounds very lenient, and I appreciate you for underestimating it so as to make our listeners not make me think I'm quite as insane as I am. But the biggest thing I read this week was Pacific Rim, Tales from the Drift, 1-3. Joshua Hale, oh God, now we got to get his name right. Fialkov?
Yes.
I hope. it means beautiful flower in Russian. I remember that. So
we're only laughing because I was listening to last week's podcast, and Nick every single time he brings up this guy. If you've listened to at least like 10 episodes of this podcast, Nick has brought him up at some point, and he always goes, "I don't know if this is how you say it," and then he pronounces it. And so I was talking about it on Twitter, and I mentioned this guy, and because I'm not even gonna try to do it.
You're not even gonna try. Yeah, don't even think I didn't notice that.
Yeah, and so he replied back to me. Goes, it's this. It's Fialkov. Is that what it is?
I'm glad that he replied to you, and you still don't know what it is.
Yeah, he replied.
He specifically told you.
Yeah, he did. I feel so bad about it, but he was a super cool guy about it. So I'm at least happy about that. Anyways, Nick, continue.
Yeah, so it's written by him, and it was kind of a mess for a while there because I was having trouble, between the promos and everything, having trouble really trying to figure out when this book was supposed to take place. And after the third issue, it sort of made it clear that this takes place maybe about 12 to 15 years before Pacific Rim, the movie. And I really like it. It does feel like they've taken a lot of the little character arcs within the movie and sort of condensed them into the two or three main characters of the book. But I don't really know if that is more on him or more on, I think it's Travis Beecham, who wrote the movie and is also sort of generally running the story on this. But yeah, I really like it. There's one issue left. I think I probably know where it's going to go, but it's still a really beautiful book and sort of another good argument for licensed properties making the most of what they have, I guess. What about you, Mike? What did you read?
Before I get into what I read, I did look it up. He says it's Fialkoff. Fialkoff.
With an F or with a V at the end?
F. So it's Joshua Fialkoff. Hale Fialkoff. There, Fialkoff. Now we know. We've settled the dispute. So this week I read a couple books. Uncanny X-Men number 1, because X-Men. And
which one is that again? Is that Lemire? So, I never remember these.
So this one is Cullen Bunn.
Oh.
And Dennis Hopeless is on All New X-Men. This is Cullen Bunn with, what's his name? The guy who traces porn, Greg Land. And
shots fired.
Shots fired because everyone on the internet, this was a book that is an X-Men team led by Magneto with Sabretooth, Psylocke, Archangel, and one other person who I can't remember. And it was a very weird issue, to say the least. There was a lot of action, and they're trying to basically, the story is Magneto and his team are trying to stop these people from transporting mutants across the country. These mutants who have put themselves into stasis because they want to. I mean, I'm pretty much spoiling the whole book here, so I'm sorry for anyone who hasn't read Uncanny X-Men number 1.
Makes sense.
But the story is they're trying to free these mutants who are in stasis, and because these people, essentially because of the whole Terrigen Mist thing, basically all the X-Men bullshit is getting tied into this story with Cyclops being a bad guy, the Terrigen Mists from the Inhumans basically that are basically killing off or sterilizing all of the current living mutants. So it's been a really interesting story, so far if you read all the other X-Men books. But I don't know, it was such a weird issue. I'm going to keep reading it because I'm going to at least give it an arc, because that's how much I, believe in Cullen Bunn and the X-Men. But it was very weird, to say the least.
Well, I mean, that's good. After Cullen Bunn's little Aquaman fiasco, it's nice to see that, someone is willing to sit it out a couple issues and see.
See, I don't understand that, why there's so much hate for Cullen Bunn, because he's a very, very good writer.
What's weird is I've run into a couple people in the last, I wouldn't say the last couple days, in the last month or two, and there's a lot of Sixth Gun hate out there. I haven't read it yet, but I know a lot of people that are like very much like, oh, you don't want to read that.
Really? Yeah. I've only heard praise about that book.
Me too, up until that point.
His run on Moon Knight most recently was fantastic, so I don't know. I'm trusting it. Yeah. The other thing I read was the Fade Out number 12, just to see the end of that book.
Careful.
Long story short, I was slightly disappointed in the end, but I don't really know what a satisfying ending would be. But it reminded me of the end of Fatale, where there wasn't so much of a pin put in the end of the story as much as Brubaker was saying, well, this is kind of how life ends. When something happens in someone's life, this is how things go. I wasn't too disappointed by it. It just wasn't. I wanted more of a bang, I guess, at the end.
I'll read it and tell you, but I'm guessing it was probably the right ending for the book and the right ending for the trajectory of the story. But it still doesn't mean that, for example, if you turned something like that into a movie, that's the sort of thing that maybe they would swap out and do something else with or whatever.
Yeah, but. Anyways, the biggest book that I read this week, the book that I really, really enjoyed this past week, came out last Wednesday, is X-Men, The Worst X-Men Ever, number 1.
Is this the Bemis book?
This is the book that written by Max Bemis and art by someone whose name I can't... I really should write all this stuff down before I do the show, but I don't. But this is a story written by Max Bemis. It takes place outside of the regular continuity of the X-Men. It's a 5-issue miniseries. And it's all about this kid who's a mutant, and he has the worst mutant power ever. And I won't tell you what it is, but it's a really fun, enjoyable...
Damn it, can you not tell me? Because when I heard about this book, I spent about 5 minutes trying to have someone explain to me what his power was.
I really don't want to spoil it. I think that everyone should read this book, because it's a really fun romp into... like, it's an X-Men story that just... I don't know, the X-Men need right now. It doesn't need to be so serious, and it needs to have little quirks and side jokes and stuff like that just about the X-Men. And I think anyone who knows the basics of the X-Men, that they go to the professor school or Professor Xavier's school, Beast is there, you know who like the kind of like main cast of the X-Men are, even in just the remotest sense. Like, you know who Beast is, you know who Jubilee is, you know who Kitty Pryde is, Colossus, Nightcrawler, Wolverine, and you know what Sentinels are. Like, I think really anyone could probably pick up this book and enjoy it. And it was such a pleasure to read. I hate to use this word, but it was charming. Like, it was very nice.
The compared to all the other X-Men books, by the way.
Oh, Michael Walsh. Yeah, thank you.
Walsh.
Yeah. So that was a killer book. I really would suggest it to anybody, and it was so funny. That's the thing that really got me. It was very much like a punk rock, not even punk rock, like emo kid kind of story with some jokes, and it was about the X-Men. So it's the thing that like hits me right in the heartstrings, you know, to bring up some Dashboard or Brand New or Taking Back Sunday or something like that,
or Say Anything.
Yeah, for that case, or in that case, yeah. But,
have you read any of his Boom stuff?
I haven't. I started on Max Bemis's Polarity. I didn't really get too far into it before I think became distracted and stopped reading it. But I have it. Like, I did get it in like a Boom bundle at some point. So sure. I've been meaning to read it. I know that he's doing pretty all right as a comic book writer. Like, he's not writing all the time, but he's at least getting some work here and there. And it seems to be mostly well received.
Yeah. We're basically in the same camp on that. I've heard he's doing well, and I know his Boom series got a follow-up and everything, but I haven't read any of it.
Yeah. So, John, you should pick up this book. It's really fun.
The worst X-Men?
X-Men, the worst X-Man ever.
Is that the title? Please let it be. Is it X-Men, the worst X-Man ever? Is that really?
Yes, that's actually the title of the book.
Oh, I love it. I love it's, bad titles. I really
it's
do.
So good. Anyways, so what are you guys excited for this week? I know that this week is kind of an okay-sized week for most people, at least it was for me. So what's your pick for this week, John?
I didn't have one at first, so I did some looking around on Comixology and other internet sites, and I found out that Mighty Morphin Power Rangers number 0 is supposed to come out this week. So I think I'll be picking that up.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Are you really that into Power Rangers that you're going to try it out?
Whoa, that's kind of loaded, man.
Easy. I know, that's a loaded Power question Ranger. Right
that
there.
That was definitely like a leading question of like, man, are you stupid?
Are you really that stupid, John?
No, man, I played that game Chroma Squad, and it made me think of my childhood when I watched Power Rangers.
Okay.
And I figured I would give it a try, even though I hate when comics do like number 0, because Just fucking start the story. Just start it.
Why?
Well, it makes me wonder if the number 0 is just going to be a, hey, if in case you've never heard of the Power Rangers because you've been living under a rock in the United States for the last 25 years, here's Zordon and Rita and Mastodon, Pterodactyl, whatever.
Triceratops.
Sabertooth Tiger.
Do you know what this book is potentially going to be about, or are you just going off the title alone?
No idea. Just going off the title. That's it.
Cool.
I'm going to see if it's even at my local comic shop. It should be, so we'll see. But that's the pick that I have this week, because I otherwise didn't have one, because despite what you said, my week is actually very, very sparse, which is to say nothing.
Gotcha. Let me know how that is, because I know that Mighty Morphin Power Rangers was for a while being published by a very small publisher called Paperclips, and Paperclips with a Z, I should say, Paperclips, and now it moved over to Boom, and at
Boom... What do
you
mean with a Z? That's how I spell it.
Yes.
How are you supposed to spell it?
With an S, Nick, come on. You're the English person, major man.
I've had to tell so
English.
Many people like this, that doesn't mean I'm good at spelling. Jeez.
So Saperclips?
Saperclips.
Yeah.
Saperclips. Okay.
But no, I know that this book is moving over to Boom, and I think Boom does a pretty good job with their licensed properties. Mm-hmm. So that, I mean, this may be a pretty killer book. I don't know.
Yeah, it's got Kyle Higgins on it, writing. So clearly they know the importance of putting good talent on a book. So.
Yeah. Nick, what's your pick for this week?
My pick is Descender number 9 and it's rather tough to talk about why without spoiling too much, so I'm just going to have to tiptoe around this a bit. Number 8 opened up the second arc of Descender, which, for being someone who really hates long arcs, I didn't mind Descender being a 7-issue arc to open up a book, which really says something about the quality of the book. But 8 ended with a wonderful cliffhanger where, well, I feel like I can at least discuss some of the events of Descender 1. Like, I feel like that's not
spoilery at all.
Anyway, so the whole focus or focal point of Descender has always been following around this robot, Tim 21, who seemingly, at least at first, is the only robot left in the universe. And we realize that this is because these massive robots, I forget the names, showed up and wiped out a bunch of planets. The galaxy teamed together, fought them off, and after that they said, well, we are going to kind of get away from that idea that you shouldn't throw out the baby with the bathwater, and let's just get rid of all robots.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, Tim 21 was the companion bot of a... he sort of was like the robot friend of this kid whose mom was like a geologist on some far-off planet. There's a disaster on the planet, and the robot wakes up and both of them are gone. We discover at the end of 8 that one of those people may or may not be alive, and they may or may not be on the best of terms with Tim. I'll leave it at that. It was shocking, okay. It was interesting, and it left a large amount of ambiguity as to whether or not this character, who may or may not be alive, who am I kidding, they're alive, whether or not this character wants wants bad things to happen to Tim or not. But it's Jeff Lemire. He knows how to hit all of the emotional notes just expertly, and it's... I'm very, very interested to see where this book goes. Dustin Nguyen art as well, and I can't say enough about him.
Beautiful watercolors. Similar to a creator named Ray Fox. No, I won't do that.
Oh,
won't
no.
That. No, that's cool. I read the first 4 issues of this comic. I really need to catch up. I really need to do that. John, have you read any of this book at all? I feel like I've told you that you'd be interested in this, since it's about robots in the future and stuff, but...
I haven't. I think that started happening or coming out right as I had to buy 2 new cars, so my budget's been a bit tight, and I have not been picking up many new comics unless it's something that I know that I can afford.
Right, right.
Well, I would definitely recommend this one in trade, John, because I think the first 6 or 7 issues are in a volume that's like $9.99, so you're nearly paying like a little more than $1 per issue.
Okay, yeah.
So if you wanted a very affordable way to pick this up, that's about as cheap as you can get.
Yeah. Yeah, unless you get it in like a Humble Bundle or some like Image sale or something like
right.
that.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Well, cool. My pick for this week is Secret Wars number 9. The comic book's so nice they decided to charge us $5.99 or $4.99 or some thousand million dollars for the issue.
And then add an extra issue and then delay things massively. And then
start books that, you know, that have the conclusion already have happened in the story. You know, all that fun stuff. But it's the final conclusion, the final absolute conclusion probably before they do a 5-issue epilogue series or something like that. That basically rounds off this whole Secret Wars thing with Doom as the creator. No, the 5-issue epilogue thing is totally made up in my mind. They did that for, I think, Fear Itself. They did like a 12-issue wrap-up series. I was going to say,
you're not coming up with an idea that hasn't been done.
Yeah. So, but this is the final issue to this massive, humongous event that is essentially taken up almost a year's time in Marvel history. And it's been pretty cool so far. I mean, admittedly, you know, everyone may bitch and complain about it being a crossover, but it's actually a really killer story. And I think the numbers show that it actually is doing really well. Like, it is a good book, because this has been one of the top-selling comics consistently. Whenever an issue comes out, it's always near the top of sales for that month. So this book, it's not only do the numbers tell the truth, but I am telling you that it's actually really, really well done. And I would say, hey, if you're interested, buy the collection, but I guarantee you the collection's going to be like $35 or $30 just to get 9 issues of comics, which is insane to me. But
it's Marvel. It'll probably be 40. Yeah.
So wait a little while. Wait for Marvel to do a big sale on Comixology and buy all the issues, you know, for half off or for a dollar each or something. It's a really good story, all things considered. All of the craziness that goes into the story is totally worth it because Doom is awful and amazing at the same time, and all of the twists and turns, and I've said this many times, but all the twists and turns that they've taken on all the characters and factions and things of that nature have been really, really cool. I haven't read any of the Battle World stuff. I refuse to buy into any of those little tie-in miniseries. But just just reading the main story by itself, it's actually really, really cool. So I'm excited for this to be done.
That sounded really interesting. So this is Hickman and Ribic, right?
Yeah, this is Jonathan Hickman on writing and Isad Ribic on art. And together, I mean, they are a really good team. I think they totally get each other. And Ribic's art is unparalleled. Like, he's another one of those painters that are just doing just phenomenal art.
Yeah, and you can wholeheartedly say that because you're not buying into any of the other stuff, you are reading this as a strictly isolated event and you've still gotten a lot out of it? Or are you reading some stuff on the peripheral that may or may not be helping you out?
I think, I mean, I really didn't buy any Battle World books. So the only stuff I read that had a Secret Wars title on it was the End of Days books. So, like when Miss Marvel was coming to an end and when Silver Surfer was coming to an end, they had
that book Secret got a lot Wars. Of awards this year.
Yeah, those books had the Secret Wars. Miss
Marvel book. Yeah.
Yeah, they had the Secret Wars title on them, but they weren't even about Secret Wars. They were just about the end of the world that led to Secret Wars. After that, I didn't read anything. I was really tempted to buy the Brian Michael Bendis Old Man Logan book, and I didn't. Even though Andrea Sorrentino was on the art, but I told myself I wouldn't do it. I think I read one issue of A-Force because I was told it was really good and I couldn't continue because it made no sense and it was not very well constructed. But so, I mean, and that was way back in the summer. So other than that, I haven't read anything that's tied into this Secret War or that is tied into Secret Wars. And I've gotten a complete story. I mean, I think it might help that I read New Avengers leading up to the story, leading up to Secret Wars, which kind of gives you some backstory to it. But even in this main series itself, they hit on all the points you need to know about how they got to this point in the first two issues, and they do it in a very natural way. So I think it's been fantastic. But I might be a sucker because this is Dr. Doom here, and I love Dr. Doom.
Fair enough. Yeah, I was going to say, Jordan and I saw some trades at Barnes that were, I think they were, like, one of them was, like, Weird World, which is, that's like a Secret Wars tie-in, right? Technically? And a lot of them...
That's a book that was actually continued after Secret Wars. They decided to reboot it at number one, like, with a whole new storyline, which I did read, and it was interesting, to say the least.
But to tie back into our point from earlier, just to, you know, talk about annoying things, a lot of these trades were labeled as trade number zero. So what? It's not just issues. We saw trades that were labeled trade number zero. Goodness. So let's just ban the zero. Maybe we just need to ban the zero. Maybe that's the new soapbox for right now, is the zero issue needs to go away because it doesn't make sense. Some people put it as the first issue of a series, and then you have DC who goes and uses it as their origin issue, and that comes out as issue 13, I think, for all the new 52 books. So who knows? Maybe that's a topic for another day.
Well, they do that at they did that. Okay, the only time I've actually benefited from that, I think, and the only times I should say plural here is is when I was reading Avatar books. So when I read Uber, the Kieran Gillen book, that series had a zero issue that was kind of like a teaser about the story, and I think it was $2.99 instead of their regular $3.99. It was a little bit shorter, but it was just like a little brief lead up to the actual main story. If you didn't read it, it would have no effect on the story. And I think that's great because that's what a zero issue in my mind should be. It should be like a little one-off or like a one-shot story that if you read it, sure, provides a little bit more color and flavor, but it's not necessary by any means. You know,
yeah, and it sort of keeps writers from having to bog down their first issue or two with, you know, all of the supplementary background stuff.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's not so bad, you know?
Okay.
I don't know.
Tell us how you really feel, John.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
John, have you had any encounters with zero issues or,
yeah,
or not?
Yeah, I have. I've had a few. Well,
I mean, you're about to have one, it sounds like.
I'm not going to like it, but I'll do it. Now, the other one that I had experience with was, it wasn't a zero, it was a 0.5 or a 0.1.
Oh, those are 0.1s. What is with Marvel and 0.5s and 0.1s? Even yeah. DC doesn't. Oh, wait, we do 0.1s. Never mind.
No, we've done those. For Guardians of the Galaxy, that's what it was.
Oh,
it was,
yeah.
The one where they introduced, and this is the thing that I suppose I feel conflicted about this, because on the one hand, if you have information that I should know, just fucking tell me. You don't need to make it a whole different issue, because it effectively is going to be the exact same thing. If you call that thing issue zero or issue one, it's the same thing.
Right.
I mean, I'm still going to buy it. If I say, hey, I'm pulling this series, there's a good chance my local comic shop will just get whatever the first issue is, whether it be one or zero. And I'm mm-hmm. still going to have to slog through that same piece of information heavy, or that same information heavy issue. That's just, hey, this is the backstory. This is this thing, and that is this thing, and this is how it all works. If you want to call it zero or one, it's the same issue, and it's still going to end up in my hands. I'm still probably going to buy it. So
right.
that decimal is almost like a preemptive apology from the publisher. It's like, if we put this here, you and I are both very clear what we're getting at, right? Like, if we put this decimal, you know what you're getting, and we know what we're delivering. So let's just be upfront about it.
When you put it that way, I guess I don't care nearly as much as if you look at it as a warning of, hey, if you don't like to read, you might want to skip this one. If you just you buy comics just
if you thought reading was bad, you're going to have to deal with decimals first. Oh, fuck.
So this is something I know we talked about on the show before, but it came up in the pre-show, and I thought that it was actually a good discussion topic instead of the let's gripe and complain about comics, which is what we do every week anyways. But instead of having that be the primary focus for this week, I actually wanted to talk to John and Nick about their comic book like storage and cataloging and collecting, how they keep everything together, like how they store it, where they put it. So I have a whole system for myself, but I'm really curious, Nick and John, what are you guys do to, you know, collect your books? Where do you put them? How do you store them? All that stuff.
Well, some time ago, I would have said neatly in long boxes, and some still are.
Oh, this cannot go anywhere good.
No, it can't. This is John being very lazy and also very forgetful when it comes to going to his comic shop. Mm-hmm. I have not bought a long box in a year and a half, and God, I've needed one for 2 years. So at this point, I have a bunch of comics.
You're starting a GoFundMe page for John. You can look in the links beneath this. And
GoFundMe for $15.
Yes.
You might say, Nick, is it really going to cost $600? Yes. Because reasons.
That will also pay for John's medical bills, because he's seen a therapist about this disarray of comic book collecting. No. Continue, John, continue.
So, at this point, I have three main places in which my comics exist, and there is organization in one, possibly two of those two places.
Okay.
Sorry, actually, what I should have said is there's organization in one place, and the other two places have their own separate system called the Johnny Decimal System.
This sounds like a perfect reproduction of, like, governmental efficiency, but carry on.
Yes, yes.
And none of the systems know what the other systems are doing, and there's no talk between them.
No, but each one interferes with the other one, though.
Yeah, somehow.
So there's the long boxes, which is like area A. Long boxes are organized to a degree. They're all organized alphabetically, but the is still sort of a controversial topic because mm-hmm. I have half right. of the right. in T, and I have half of like the Hulk. That's an H. Because why? I don't know. Fuck you for asking.
Because it's like the Hulk. I know what you're thinking. Like, your train of thought is, like, Hulk is a big enough thing that, like,
yeah,
you don't... It doesn't need the where but, less prominent topics do.
Yeah, so, like, the Hypernaturals, one of my favorite series, is
oh, that's
in
so good.
T. I don't know why. Just because. Hulk, definitely an H, even though it's the Hulk. I don't know why, but that's just the way it is. Everything else is alphabetically organized.
What would you do with Planet Hulk?
Ooh, that is a good question. I would probably put it in P, which means I have to go move the Hulk now. Thanks, Nick.
Oh, this is already such a fucking mess. Keep going.
I can't see the contradictions and not do something about them now. I was happy and ignorant before. So, other than the long box area, I have two places in which comics exist. One of them is on the coffee table upstairs, and one of them is on the coffee table downstairs. Because
okay.
When Xander moved in, he brought his collection of coffee, well, some of his collection of coffee tables, and we also have a bunch of end tables downstairs that we used to use, but we don't anymore for various reasons that might involve coffee and maybe wax, whatever. It definitely wasn't my fault. That's what I'm going to say about that.
Okay.
It was.
I feel like there's a much bigger story there, but no, please continue about the comics, John.
So the upstairs coffee table is all the comics I need to read, and the downstairs coffee table, which is a significantly larger collection of them, are all the ones that I've read that are waiting to be sorted into the long box that I will eventually buy.
I think we're going to buy you a long box. I think yeah. It's been decided.
Yeah,
now.
I think we need to buy you a long box.
How does Andrea feel about all of this?
Yeah. She hates it. She absolutely hates it. She wants them organized, and I keep saying, yeah, I'll buy one, and I have every intention to buy a long box. I'm not doing this maliciously. I'm just dumb.
Forgetful, John. You're not
you
dumb.
I'm also kind. Forgetful.
You is special. You is important. Remember that, all right?
And also dumb.
No, we're not going to, or no one's going to recognize my The Help reference. Okay, just let's
keep
going.
No,
okay.
I recognized it. I didn't have a good response for it.
Okay.
Both of you have seen The Help? Wow, I have not seen that movie.
Oh, John, or Nick, you got to get on that. It's a great movie.
Okay. All right.
So you have all of your comics in disarray for the most part. Are they at least like sorted on your downstairs coffee table, or are they just, as you read them, they just go on the pile?
They were sorted for a while, and mm-hmm. I would say maybe a third of my comics are not in disarray. Well, no, half, because half of them are still in long boxes. It's just that the other half need to be in a long box, but the problem is that if I buy or get a long box, actually, this is what it is. I have so many comics now that I will need to take out large chunks of one long box and move it to another one, which involves a substantial amount of work that I don't want to do. That's probably why I haven't
dilemma.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They used to be organized though, and then I had actually it was the Extra Life event, and I had to move a bunch of stuff around. So now they exist in two large piles, and there's no order to those piles.
Oh my goodness. Oh man, this sounds like me in my last two apartments. I would get to this moment every quarter, and I would say, okay, I have to organize all of my books, and then I would spend 5 hours. Going through, because I mean, at one point I had 9, almost 10 long boxes worth of comics. So, you know, sorting through and saying, oh, I've got 12 issues of this book. That means I have to significantly take a chunk out of this long box, move it to the next one, and then that cascades down to the whole rest of them.
Can I just interject with, do you measure your life in quarters?
Yes.
Okay.
Sure.
Just curious. Yeah. Okay, so those are your old apartments. How about now? How are you doing now with your organization?
Well, since I'm buying a significantly less amount of physical books, I think I've only filed my comic books once since I got here, and that's in about 8 months. And I have a stack, two small stacks, probably maybe not even a short box full of comics that need to go into my long boxes, but my long boxes each have a lot of room in them because I purposely did that so that when I went to go file the books, I wouldn't have to do this massive shift. So I just have this, basically every week, you know, or every other week or whenever I get comics, like physical comics, I put them on top of my this pile. So they're in no order on top of the microwave that's sitting in my apartment, the extra microwave that I have. And they essentially just need to be filed. So it's not too bad. I think it would probably take me an hour or two to actually go through them. But the problem is the way that my long boxes are stored right now, they're kind of in a corner with things on top of them. So it's just a hassle. Like, I'm in the same boat as you where I have somewhere to put them, but I just don't want to do it because it's going to be a labor. even though I should. But other than that, I mean,
say, like, how many boxes are you wielding at this point, Mike? I know you trimmed things down.
Yeah, I'm down to 4 long boxes, and those are all sorted alphabetically. At one point, okay, I did consider sorting them by publisher, but I figured I'd rather not want, like, kill myself and do that.
Yeah.
So they're just sorted straight alphabetical, and I like it that way. It's much easier to find, and the boxes are labeled, not necessarily with the letters, but they're numbered, so I know which box is what. And for the most part, I can, you know, deduce what's in each box based on the cover that I can see through the handle of the long box. It's a whole thing. And of course, the other piece of the labor that I actually want to do, and I did this when I gave away/sold all of my comics, I cataloged almost, I want to say probably 3,000 comics, maybe less than that. Maybe 2,000 comics. I cataloged each and every single issue so that when I gave them away and sold them to people, I knew what I was getting rid of. And then I donated probably 6-5 long boxes worth of comics to my old comic book club. And when I did that, I said, here's also the list of all the comics that you have in these boxes, and they are in alphabetical order,
which I think is
super awesome. I mean, and I feel really happy that I did it, but it took me probably 2 hours a day for almost a week to do that. Like,
I remember that week. Yeah, that was basically your job.
Yeah, like, I would finish work and then I would spend 2 hours every night doing that. It was a massive endeavor, but it was totally worth it. And I really want to do that with all the issues that I have now, like all of the physical books, because there's so few that I'm buying. Keeping up with that list shouldn't be hard. When I get the books, bring them home, I should be able to just put them in the spreadsheet. And then I can do all sorts of numbers on, you know, my own stuff and say, well, you know, I own this many Marvel comics and this many DC and Image, boom, blah, blah, blah. And then even go even further and say when I bought them, you know, I mean, I wouldn't know it for all of them, but if I, you know, started the list and kept moving forward, I could say, well, I bought these, and you can see waves. And then, you know, as the year goes by, I buy more Image in December and I buy more Marvel in the summer, or, you know, fun data stuff, because I'm a fucking nerd. I don't know. I love Excel spreadsheets for that reason. Like, in cataloging comics has become a thing that I've got a real good pattern working. So I know how to do it really, really well. And, you know, that I know how to use Excel really well, as, you know, at the same time. So that's pretty much my stuff. Everything that I have is digital, is, you know, it's on Comixology, so I don't have to really worry about it. They do all the hard work for me. However, I do wish that I could get, like, an export of all of the books that I own with, like, the publisher, the creators on the book, maybe not even the creators on the book, but how much I paid for it, whether I bought it on sale or if I got it for free or if I paid full price for it, and so on and so forth, as well as the purchase date. Then you could do, like, a whole analysis and say, here's how much I paid for these things. And that'd be the other part of the
Excel spreadsheet. You just want to be able to do, like, full diagnostics and data crunching and
sort
by year and everything.
Yeah, and you can create, like, a proper budget for these types of things. You go, well, I normally spend this much and I want to cut it down to this much, so that means I, you know... You could do all sorts of stuff with it. It's data. It's awesome.
And to some extent they have that, but, like, even Jordan was bringing up yesterday how, you know, obviously it's not a perfect system. He was freaking out because it told him his pull was going to be a lot of money, and he's like, what is going on? And then he looked, and Comixology had, like, one of his books had covers A through D, and it had added all 4 of them.
Yeah, yeah, that'll happen
onto
sometimes.
Onto his pull. So, yeah.
That's something that, I mean, that the whole pull list system needs to be updated, but I don't know. I don't have any absolute solutions for that, so I don't want to speak too much about it, but, you know, there's lots of room for improvement, and I think whether Comixology does it or someone else does it, Diamond would be probably the best person to do it. Like, why wouldn't they? They have all the data. They have the ability to do that. I don't even know what their internals look like, but I have written, you know, even myself, I'm a programmer by day, and I've written little simple scripts to scrape information and, like, crunch it down, and it's totally possible, and Diamond could easily do that. But, you know, here we are, we sit and we have to just deal with their, not so lucrative, fantastic, or not so great system that they have, because it's the only one that exists. So, I don't know.
Right.
It's kind of a bummer. But Nick, how do you, keep and catalog all your books? What's your process for everything?
it's a bizarre one, because it is very methodical, very organized, very well thought out in certain aspects, and then it becomes remarkably slapdash in others. It's really weird. It's kind of like me. It's me. Another facet of me. Okay, well, here we go. So, in a lot of ways, I am pretty careful, pretty OCD about my collection, which is a little bizarre considering how 99% of what I have is not old, it's not valuable, it's not any of that stuff. But sure, I bag and board all of my books. I am that guy when, if the store's not too busy or I'm not in anyone's way, if I have a book that the store buys multiple copies of, like Batman or Batman and Robin, yeah, I'll go grab the remaining store copies and sort of just sift through them and, make sure mine, if I think mine doesn't look that great, I'll see if there's a better looking copy.
Nick.
I know that bugs Mike, but I do understand that, like I said, it's you only do it when it's not going to bug anyone else and when it's not insane.
I only say something because I was just at Midtown the other day.
You had another,
and there was another guy, and he grabbed the entire stack of this book by the staples. Like, he grabbed them all by the edges, and he was holding them all, and you could see him bending, and he wanted to go through, and he wanted to find the copy that didn't have one of the ones that had the perfect corners, and I saw him thumbing through all of them, and I'm like, you are deteriorating all of the other books by doing this.
Don't wreck other people's books. That's
so
just
frustrating
awful
to me. Because
I mean, treat the remaining copies. It's the golden comic rule. Treat the remaining copies with the treatment you'd like to see towards yours. I do think that is what it says in the Bible. but yeah, I mean, if my copy has a really smushed corner or it looks really like split, I'll go look. So yeah, there's a certain amount of detail and care that goes into that. And then when it goes home, that amount of detail swiftly deteriorates in the process. I do long boxes. I do short boxes. I have a little bit of both. I wish I had the forethought to think through the fact that when you get more comics, eventually you will need to take comics out of. So I just fill my long boxes, which is horrifyingly stupid because.
Wait, with no order? You just put them in the boxes?
Well, they're not in order. They're not in order if you consider the fact that I know what order I bought the comics in. So I can say that's long box number one.
Ooh, it's chronological. And then,
yeah, it's chronological, but that also gives it more intent and care than it truly has. because if I put off reading a book for a while, or the book gets lost and ends up in a different bag, then when I'm done reading it, it's not going to necessarily go in the right chronological box if it really gets put off or lost for a while. So what I'm saying is at that point, there's really no system. My comics are in pretty good condition.
Mm-hmm.
You'll just never know where to find them. That's probably the best way of putting it. It's a problem that really can only compound itself, unfortunately. The more boxes I fill, the more they're just, full to the brim, and the more they're out of order, the more work it will be if and when I eventually want to do anything other than put them in a slapdash chronological order. This awful habit has only been compounded by the fact that with Humble Bundles and Groupies sales and Comixology sales, a lot of times I've gotten digital backups of stuff that I owned physically. So at that point, when that happens, I just pat myself on the back and go, well, now you don't have to go find those hard copies and put them in order because it's irrelevant now. welcome to my thought process.
Yeah.
It's something I would like to get around to, but also a lot of times, for me at least, and I know, Mike, you and I have talked about this before, it's always nice to have like your most recent books just in a little short box that you have that's easily accessible to you.
Yeah.
And those are really the only books that I feel like, well, okay, I need to have those front and center and I might need access to them, you know, at some point in the not too distant future. That used to have more value when I was trying to use hard copy comics when writing a review or doing reference work.
Yeah.
But now, most of the time, if I'm like writing a review of something, I'll just shell out the $2 or $3 and just buy a digital copy so I don't have to constantly worry about, you know, picking up. And this is going to sound so neurotic, but unfortunately, everyone will understand, you know, just continuing to pick up the oils off of my keyboard and then go to the comic and then flip through the pages and then go back to the keyboard. Et cetera. So at that point, I just buy a digital copy. It's not worth the trouble. So,
gotcha.
Any questions?
Yeah, you are now a study in this comic book, I guess, trial that we're going through.
Yeah.
So do you have any intent to eventually sort any of your books, or do you think that, like, for the time being, like, you're not really too worried about it? I mean, the reason why we sort books in some cases, I think, is probably because, you know, we want to be able to find them again in the future, but if you're not really going back too far, then I guess your whole short box solution works for you, right?
Right, and that's really the biggest thing is, like, I'm sure Paul's collection is probably immaculate, but that's also because he likes to go back and reread stuff pretty frequently. Mm-hmm. So for him, I think there's more of a use there. For me, there haven't been many moments when I've needed to go back and find a book again, and there especially haven't been many moments when I've needed to go back and find an older book. And look at that again. Most of the time, if I'm needing to look up a book, it's usually at most 2 to 3 months old, mm-hmm. and it's usually just for a review. That's not to say I don't wish I was one of those people that wanted to go back and reread things and get more mileage out of stuff. But I guess I'm just not hardwired that way. I'm also one of those people that, as terrible as it sounds, I don't really frequently see the use in rewatching movies.
Weirdo. Man, I love rewatching movies.
Yeah, I know. Well, obviously there are certain movies, it's like, why, you know, why watch it again? Like Sixth Sense, I'm sure someone's going to be like, why are you saying don't rewatch that again? But you know what I mean?
Yeah,
there are certain
yeah.
movies like that that are, you don't. All right, let's just defend my movie watching. Great, we're
Go
now
for
on that.
Go
this
for
is
it.
Just going to be a full set of apologetics of Nick White and his pop culture consumption methods. This is terrible. But yeah, that's me in comics. I like I said, I do have short boxes. I do long boxes. And usually I usually wait until I have enough comics to fill a box, because that's just, you want to talk about shit that drives you crazy. Especially try filling a long box when you can only fill like 20 or 30% of it.
And then it falls down.
Then you gotta,
yeah.
then you gotta go find heavy,
or they get
heavy
bent.
Books.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
I remember, I
find
think,
something to prop it up.
I want to say it was probably, I don't know, 8 months ago or something like that. Nick, you sent me a picture. You had probably, I don't know, 30, 40 books stood up in a short box, and you had like a big, heavy book next to them, and you were like, do you think this will be okay? Do you think they'll be able to stand up and they won't fall back and bend and stuff? And I was like, I don't know, man. Like, I have a
yeah.
shoebox that I keep inside of my short box, so when I put books into the short box, that shoebox holds the books up to the
oh,
end so that they don't
smart.
Fall over and bend.
This is really ingenious, and I think we're onto something here, and unfortunately, like, we're going to do nothing about it. Someone's going to listen to this podcast, capitalize on it, and then we're going to have a lengthy arbitration in court. But that being said, don't worry, I'm already working on my opening remarks. They will not be off the cuff.
Yeah,
I've actually just submitted the patent for the shorter box.
Son of a bitch, John.
Well, no, you know, it's actually really funny that you guys say that, because for Christmas, I had
found
this thing online.
Oh my God, did you get a shoebox?
No, let me take a step back. So when I was at New York City Comic Con, I was talking to Val DeLandro, because he's a super awesome dude, and he's the artist of Bitch Planet. So we were talking about that, and there was a woman behind me who was like, hey, can I get some comics signed? And I was like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to take up this guy's time. And she opened this little hard case box, and inside it, there was probably 20 comics, And it was this nice little comic book sized, made by the company that makes all the, you know, BCW, I think, who makes all of the comic supplies.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it was specifically meant to carry around books in like a hard surface so that they wouldn't get bent or anything. And these things, they sell online for like $7. And I put one on my Amazon wish list for Christmas, because that's how we do shopping in, you know, the modern era. And my mom ended up getting that for me for Christmas. And it's the coolest little container for, you know, like if you've got 20-ish books, you know, that you need to carry around or you want to keep at like the regular, you know, availability, rather than having to put them in a long box or a short box or our newly patented shorter box. This is like a micro box. Of all things.
No, this is good, because neither of these things are actually what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. Not what I'm getting okay, at. Okay. But it's really like, cool. So, I mean, something like that is really something that you could potentially look into. And, I mean, when you have bags, when you have comics that are bagged and boarded, you know, you could probably store less. Just like if you were in a long box, if you didn't have them bagged and boarded, or even just boarded, you could probably store more in the box. But, you know, being neurotic people that we are, we bag and board everything. Or in the case of someone who goes to Vault of Midnight, in Grand Rapids, and I love this, they give you the bag and board with the book when you buy it, or it comes Absolutely. In a bag and board, which is awesome.
Which is really great when you're trying to figure out if you've got the best copy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, they take good care of their books, man. But
yeah, I guess I'm not insinuating anything. I'm just saying that is one of the things I don't like about pre-bagging and boarding. It also somewhat discourages you from trying to find the best copy.
Yeah.
It's also like at Wendy's. You know, like at Wendy's, where if you want a refill, you have to go up to the counter and ask for it. Like,
oh,
that
yeah,
discourages
yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
free refills. So, same system.
Yeah.
You know, but that's business. That's business.
But, I mean, that's the thing. Some of these supplies, what I'm getting at is some of these supplies actually exist already. I think it's just a matter mm-hmm. of searching them out, because I don't think a lot of comic shops actually carry them. So
yeah, but Mike, my ingenious idea has not been mentioned yet.
What is ingenious idea?
So someone needs to create a device that you can put in your box, and it scales to how many comics are in your box, so that as you're slowly filling the long box, this device can shorten or enlarge in length to brace the comics and hold them upright and straight.
So like a filing cabinet.
Really, what you're describing is just a really high-tech bookend.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like pneumatically, like pneumatically powered bookend.
Which is basically like in and of itself a fancy rock.
Yeah.
Well, the thing
that's
is
what
has
I mean,
to be flat,
I'm glad.
Because you don't want it to like
But
dig
it's got
to
be flat
comic.
And it's got to be level and it's got to not crush or have any sorts of ends or whatnot that would damage the comics.
Yeah.
So like a rock with a pillow taped on it.
Yeah. No, but I think this would work. I think this would be I think this has potential.
The question is, does something like this already exist? And I think you could probably
None
check.
Of us know about
well,
it.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I didn't know about this little comic box until I saw it. And these things are sold by BCW, and I mean, you could potentially buy that. So maybe this warrants a little bit more research, because I'm very certain that you're not the only person that has this problem. Quite honestly, you walk into any comic shop, and their backlog of comics is usually pretty full for this reason, because they don't want the comics to get bent. And probably they're also trying to limit space, but at the same time, they don't want their books to get bent because they want people to buy them in, you know, pretty good quality or pretty good condition. So
yeah, there's nothing more rage-inducing than after you put the long box away in its intended place or wherever you've made space for it, and just hear the whoop.
Oh my gosh!
Yep.
Yes,
nothing gets my blood up quite like that.
Because it's one of those things where it's like you can't even put it off. Like you hear that, and you're like, "All right, I got to go deal with that now."
Yeah. Yeah, and also, like, the center of your anger, the thing that I'd like to kick, is the thing that's holding all of my valuable things that I have to go fix.
Yeah. Quote, unquote, valuable things, yeah.
Well, you know, the pieces of paper that I paid too much money for.
If you're not certain whether or not John's comics are truly valuable things, feel free to investigate. He currently lives at...
Here's our hotline at 1-800-CALL-COMICS. Wait.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I mean, there are ingenious things. I've seen a lot of stuff online of do-it-yourself style things where people build little systems like this. Like, I honestly, Nick, this system that you're talking about, I saw someone online build a comic sized, you know, 2x4 structured system where they could put probably maybe 50 or 100, probably like 100, 150 comics in. And it would, there was a piece of wood that would scale back based on how many comics you had. And then you could go to the next row and you could do the exact same thing. And I think it was four or five rows wide so this guy could hold all of his comics, and then beneath that there was shelving so he could put all of his trades. It's kind of an interesting thing. So it's something like that. I mean, you'd have to build it yourself, but it could be, you know, worth investing in if you're really concerned about that kind of stuff. Or just do what I do and get a, you know, keep a shoebox handy.
I feel like your solution is definitely the easiest solution for all these scenarios, and it achieves more or less the same result.
Yeah. Although, not to be like comic book neurotic, but I have read things on comic book collecting, not to put this bug in your ear, Mike, but and this is going to sound deranged, but I've read a couple things that say you shouldn't store comics in a shoebox because shoeboxes use certain chemicals in the construction of the box that you may or may not want near your comics.
Oh, well, I don't put them in the shoebox. I use the shoebox as a prop.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, I should correct that. I used to store comics in a shoebox before I was buying short boxes. So I'd put like a stack in a shoebox, you know, bagged and boarded still, but they'd be in a shoebox, and then I'd buy a short box, or then I eventually bought a short box and started putting them in there. But I did that for a little while. I don't know.
Yeah, I've seen people get creative. I've seen sort of shelving units that resemble sort of filing cabinets that they just put A, B, C, D, but all of that sounds really expensive. And,
yeah.
And people have gotten creative, especially because, admittedly, short boxes and long boxes, they, I guess, have some air of semi-professionalism to them, but they don't yeah. always look that great. You know what I mean?
Well, they look like
they don't look tacky, yeah. but they don't have any, like, if you have them sitting in almost any like room in anyone's house, they're not going to contribute to the decor. Let me put it that way.
They always yeah. look out of place.
Well, yeah. they always look like yeah. fucking comic boxes because they're recognizable as, well, you have comics, don't you?
Right. Right, exactly. So I've seen people design them. I've seen other people pay money for other people to like draw stuff mm-hmm. on their comic boxes. People have gotten creative with it, and I think you need that because for people that are more, you know, design inclined, the comic book storage methods do not really, you know, contribute.
I think that need may have been a strong word there.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. I guess.
I don't know. I mean, I didn't even want to touch on this, and maybe I know we have another episode planned in the future to talk more about bagging and boarding, but I mean, then there's a question mm-hmm. of, you know, how do you bag? Do you board? And Paul has mentioned, I know, in another episode that he doesn't bag and he doesn't board all of his books.
He doesn't board. He just
bags
yeah.
them. And so then there's a whole other level of like bending and all that stuff. But he has also said that, you know, he doesn't necessarily care about the quality of his books because at the end of the day, how much are they really going to be worth? And that's kind of the question we have to ask ourselves a lot of the time. You know, we put all of this care and worry into taking care of these books, but to what end? And maybe it's to cycle back to another episode again. It's about
Paul is very frustratingly at peace
yeah.
with whatever happens to his books. He's very zen about it,
right.
And it makes me super angry. That someone else, that someone else is really well tempered about it.
Yeah, but you know, at the end of the day, you know, we take care of these books because we care about them. You know, in some way, shape, or form. You know,
right. We're not necessarily they have some sort of value to us.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, I'm happy to hear how you guys do this because it's always a curious thing. I feel no two people are alike in that sense and how they do it, despite all the guides and all of the recommended things that people will probably read online. You know, how do I take care of my comics? How do I, you know, how do I keep them in a safe space? What should I do to make sure they don't get bent or damaged in any way? And no two people are alike in that regard. I always find that really interesting. So thank you guys for sharing that with me. I really appreciate it. Now we all know what kind of weird things we all have going on in our lives outside of just talking about comics. So
thanks for listening to the I Read Comic Books podcast, a Destroy the Cyborg production. This episode was produced by Mike Rappin and edited by Xander Riggs. This week's music was brought to you by Pretty Lights, C2C, and Infinity Shred. If you're listening to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, we'd love it if you would take a quick moment to rate us. Your comments and ratings help others find the show and let us know how we're doing. Otherwise, if you just want to say hi, you can email the show at cyborg@destroythecyb.org. Each email we get means a lot to us and lets us interact with all of you out there. Maybe you started reading a book we suggested. Maybe you have a suggestion for us. If email's not your game, feel free to shoot us a message on Twitter at DestroyTheSybe or through the hashtag IReadComicBooks. You can also follow us on Tumblr at DestroyTheCyborg and check out our subreddit at IReadComicBooks.reddit.com. And as always, thank you for listening.
How's your weekend been, John?
Saying to Mike, it's been oddly relaxing and or stuck at home because this tattoo that I have is on my chest, and as a result, I do not want to put a shirt on, so I've been a disgusting slob of a person all weekend, and I've been wearing, like, fake shirt things. Like, I'll wear like, a robe. But so I have this awful purple bathrobe that I wear when it's cold, and I decided that I didn't want to just go around without a shirt, because Xander is infinitely more buff than I am. But also because it's, you know, winter and cold. So I put this thing on, and I was like, well, I can't really wear one half of it. So I did the thing that, like, you see in all of the stereotypical, like, anime movies, where the one guy has, like, his coat, but he's got his one arm out of it. And I spent a day doing that, and now I'm wearing this.
Is that
this
an anime thing?
I think it is. Maybe I'm just being super insensitive.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, I feel like I've seen that a few times. Sure. I bet if I Google, like, Samurai Hero Man one sleeve, I'm going to do that. Samurai Man one sleeve.
Let's it sounds like the with. Title of an anime.
I hope it is.
Dear Man one sleeve.
Nope. What I did get is
I'm terrified to ask,
full body tattoo. Of just a naked man who's got everything, up to including his butt cheeks, covered in tattoos. So, you know, I guess I got what I deserved.
It is wonderful when a Google search goes bad.
Yep, this
especially
is nothing.
Especially a Google image search goes bad. Yeah.
And of course, the next two results are both like One Punch Man, the anime.
Right. Right.
So this has just been the weirdest Google search result. I don't know.
It's those moments that you consider turning safe search back on. Okay.
When you wonder if it's really worth it.
Is it doing its job? I mean, come on.
I mean, I didn't ask to be kept safe, but now I see why I might want to be.
Ryan. Just when you thought it was safe, search.
Well, I'm gonna close that and pretend I never saw it, and hopefully no one ever finds out about that.
I mean, Xander will now.
Well, probably, yeah. And instead of having you like complaining about IGN and Saga, it's just going to be me explaining this Google safe search thing for like 30 minutes.
In your bathrobe.
Yeah, it just it's just different varying speeds. So I sound like a robot because it's going so slow. And he speeds it up so I sound like a little chipmunk talking about some man's butt cheeks.
Oh, man. Jeez. You guys do any D&D or anything fun over the weekend?
We actually did, oddly enough. Oh. We on yesterday morning we tried to play Shadowrun, and I emphasize the word tried because that system is hard as fuck.
Okay.
There's a lot of rules. It's a simple system theoretically. It's just, you know, you roll a pool of dice against this other either a difficulty of like you have to get so many hits or some against someone else, and you compare rolls. But in practice, it was a clusterfuck. And it was just like, what are the rules? Oh, I don't know. Let me look it up.
Oh, no.
Fuck it. Just make it up. Because if it takes
more than one of those things where,
like,
not even one of you is technically really an expert on the game.
Yeah. None of us have played enough. And no one really understood the full aspect of how their character worked to say, oh, it's okay. This is actually how that works. Because everyone expects the DM to know these things, and Xander and I were like co-DMing, which we thought would be pretty cool, and it was. It was good because then it allowed you to like not talk to yourself, which was one of the most handy aspects of having two people running the game, quote unquote, because there were times when I was, you know, when I would do a game by myself and they were spying on someone.
And And you'd have to do both roles.
This is it. Yeah. This is just John talks to himself for a while and then things get weird.
Yeah.